Today, it's Edwin's Monday evening property rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Monday again, and Edwin again. Hi, Edwin.
Hello, Martin, and happy 4th of July to you.
5th of July, but, you know, who's counting?
Ah, look, yeah, under lockdown, every day just, you know, melds its way into another. So, but anyway, look, I hope you like my Che Guevara on one side and the American Eagle on the other.
Yeah, I could say a rose between two thorns.
Well, yeah, Edwin X, Saint X between two thorns. I'm conflicted, Martin. I've always been conflicted since I was born. I'm half indigenous background and half Portuguese ancestry, and always been conflicted. You know, every waking day is a conflict in my head.
Oh dear, well, it doesn't sound too promising, but hey, hang in there. I'll give you something else to stretch your brain on, right? So they're actually encouraging people to actually go visit properties in the Sydney lockdown. Isn't that fun?
Well, look, I thought that was great. It's come on. If you don't want the jab passport, right? I reckon we should lobby the government for the property inspection passport and auction passport. Yeah, so that way, you know, it's one or the other. You either get the jab passport or you get the property inspection or auction passport. What do you reckon?
Well, you know, obviously property is right at the top of the pyramid, right? You know, everything else, you know, let's not worry about it. But, you know, we got to keep the property machine going. So therefore, top priority, people should get vaccinated so they can buy property.
Oh, look, of course, it's just one of those things. It's necessary. What's the government be saying? No jab, no pay. What the hell's that all about?
Well, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? They are turning up the wick a little bit, you know. And there's still a certain amount of hesitancy. There's still a little bit of question about some of the vaccine rollouts and things. And we're way behind most of the Western countries now.
How long have you and I been speaking about this, and all our WeChat chatter telling us about the new strands that are going to come along? Now we've got the Delta strand from India. Then we've got this new strand coming in from allegedly being birthed in your part of the world, Martin, the UK. And I can't wait until we get the South American, the Latino strand. That's going to be one hot baby.
Well, you know, it is interesting. You know, some people are saying, well, hang on a moment, are all these variants reacting to the vaccines, for example? You know, I mean, this is a complex situation. I'm not going to get into who caused it and where's it heading. All I can say is that, as we've said consistently on this channel, this is going to take a long time to play out. It's not over yet. And, you know, there is no simple, straightforward path to a solution. And, of course, the point is, even if you lift the vaccination rates for the current variants of the virus, you could have new variants, you know, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, you know, sigma. Wait for it.
Look, all we know for sure, Martin, is that my eyes are getting tired and I'm wearing glasses today. So, but I don't have the virus. I just want to let the public know I don't have the virus. I'm not going to be isolating just yet. But look, all we know for sure, though, is apart from the fact that I've got glasses tonight, is the rich are getting richer. The poor seem to be getting poorer, and the middle class is shrinking. It's a polarization of the big tech, big business, big banks, big money, big everything.
Yeah, well, that's right. And it's interesting, the Bank for International Settlement just published their annual report. You know, it's the banker's banker, right? So basically they're the people in sitting above all the central banks, including the Reserve Bank. And they basically argued, no. There might be a problem with inequality. Yeah, inequality is growing, but they're not blaming low interest rates or accelerating property prices or massively inflated stock values because of low interest rates, right? There, nothing to do with them, right? They're saying, oh, it's all about technology. It's all about, globalization. They're the real people that did it, right, rather than the central bank. So it's called misdirection, Edwin. You know, don't look over here at the central banks and low interest rates and bad policy. Look over there at globalization, technology. You know, you can go and blame them.
Well, look, that's right. All I know for sure, Martin, again, is that, yeah, look, they're telling us that inflation is temporary, is transitory. But, you know, the price of zucchinis and tomatoes and carrots aren't getting any cheaper. You know, they're just going bananas.
Going bananas, carrots going bananas. Now, that's an interesting one. But, yeah, well, you know, maybe we should bring back the bartering system, Edwin. You know, forget crypto, right? Let's go long on carrots and let's go long on onions and then use that.
Look, that's what I suggested earlier on, Martin, as we were talking. It's forget cryptocurrency. I think the economy of the future, or the currency of the future, is carrots and onions.
You know, and don't forget Granny Smiths.
Yeah, Granny Smiths. Look, I'm not that fond of Granny Smiths, but you know, I'll give you one carrot for 10 Granny Smiths. How's that?
Yeah, I don't like Granny Smiths either, actually, but I suppose if you could convert them to a currency, maybe we could make a crypto Smith.
A crypto, exactly. Or there's a carrot crypto, whichever way you want to look at it, Martin. I think it's going to be the bartering system, maybe the future, especially, like, look at my family and friends in Chicago, Martin. They're paying $100 just to plonk their backsides on a chair before you even order any food or drinks. That is insanity.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, the value of things, right, and what is stuff really worth is an interesting question. I have to say, some of the stuff that goes on just astonishes me.
Look, it's amazing. But look, with all that, it's all we know is that it is getting more and more expensive to survive. It's not going to get any cheaper, I don't think. And you and I have said in the past that once businesses, big businesses, businesses in general, hike the prices, nobody wants to drop the prices. In the future, likewise, as taxes are hiked up, which government wants to roll taxes back, and the same goes for business. Unfortunately, internally, as the controls that are at play, makes it harder for things to get cheaper, I think. And with the supply chains that you and Tarek have been talking about, the economy, global transportation, the containers, going from $3,000 to $20,000 before you even pack them with anything of value to ship out, and that's if there's any guarantee of getting to Australia. Prices are just going north. Hey, Martin, north. Prices are going north.
Prices are going north. Well, that's not my fault. Lumber, of course, is going south.
Yeah, look, it's all over the shop, and let's see how it goes. But one of the things that is seems to be going south, or you could say going to hell, is when God's people don't listen, and when he tells them build an ark, he didn't tell them build a Tower of Babel, because it all comes unstuck.
Now, what could you possibly be talking about? Do we have another building crisis in Sydney?
And unfortunately, as I just said, Martin, God's people should listen. You start getting involved with Icon, and all sorts of things can happen. Unfortunately, look, this building, that's just come under fire in one of the many that are under investigation. The building watchdogs ordered it for all the defaults, the faults in the building, and all the rectification work to be done. It's basically unsafe, and it's one of those things that we're going to see more and more of this. And quite frankly, once they start getting into the areas of Burwood, Auburn, and Hurstville, I'd say we're going to get news of more buildings being evacuated, because there are a lot of buildings out there that are unsafe. I mean, this one has considerably minor issues in comparison to a lot of the other buildings that have been reported, but nonetheless, it's got some issues of concern and of hazard to the residents.
Mm. And my understanding is that the actual building company, which is sort of a subset of Icon, right, is disappeared.
Yeah, this is the interesting thing. It's Icon Co. have got become very big in Melbourne, and your poor bastards in Melbourne are now going to suffer the same things that we've gone through. Others, Icon Co. have got one project here in Sydney left to do, and this company is being, which we believe to be a subsidiary of Icon, has been put into liquidation. We don't know the connection, but there's a very close link there. Overall, Martin, with this story, one of the the good things, if there's good that comes out of all these bad building issues, is that the both the developer and the joint venture partner, CLC, are going to foot the bill, because the building company is in liquidation. So at least that is a good outcome, given the fact that in most cases, building companies just disappear along with the development companies.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But, we keep coming back to these same structural questions with regard to the high-rise quality of construction, not just in Sydney, but around the country. And I just go back to, Miami, because they're now trying to work out how to demolish the rest of that building that collapsed a couple of weeks ago, right? And the more that you read the history of it, the more there were early warning signs that people didn't take notice of. And I just worry about the resonances between that scenario and what we're seeing here locally.
Look, one of the common threads is that we, globally, is the fact that the regulatory bodies have just closed an eye to a lot of the shenanigans that have been going on, and that's the unfortunate thing. We can be coy, we can be funny with regards to when we talk about reusable plastic bags as opposed to the old brown paper bags and so forth, but that was the norm, and that needs to be curbed, and it's unfortunate that it's only when people lose their lives and perhaps even when loved ones or friends of politicians lose their lives in this bad situations and circumstances, it's only then that some action seems to be taken, or when it's over a major catastrophe. Why do we have to wait till then? I mean, what's a life worth is something that the politicians need to be asked. But again, they don't ask that themselves. So they've obviously got other agendas, and they're not really funding these regulatory bodies to be out there proactively, no different to all the shenanigans that go on with underquoting and with tenancy regulations and safety around tenancy and everything else. Not just new construction that won't get occupied until the rectification work is done, but what about the people that have been living in this squalor in these million-dollar ghettos for years and have had to put up with mold, have to put up with dangerous circumstances day in, day out?
Well, that's right. And that, of course, is the real issue, because the human cost, not just the financial cost, but the human cost is the thing that just gets missed in all of this. And in fact, I published a show over the weekend talking about asbestos and asbestos-related things and how it is that companies were able to pass the costs on to the states, or pass it on to individual property holders. All of this shifting of responsibility away from where it actually lies. And I see that again and again and again in the property sector. It's a quick buck, do the absolute minimum, and then throw the parcel to somebody else to try and pick up the pieces later. And unfortunately, the amounts we're talking about here in terms of the costs of rectification, the social costs surrounding it, are just huge, not just asbestos, but more broadly, right? And that was the point about the show that we released at the weekend. Although we were talking about, asbestos as an example, you see it again and again and again right way across the property sector.
Look, it's and the unfortunate thing, Martin, is that investors particularly over the last 15 years, as you and I discussed in previous podcasts, in previous shows, have also dropped the ball with regards to the responsibility. They're happy to take the rental incomes, but they're not so happy to rectify the issues in the investment properties, whether it be to do with owners corporations, whether it be to do with the strata lots, or whether it be to do with freestanding homes and the like, or older and new. Investors have also got to play a role and be more proactive, but will they ever be, given the current climate?
Well, that's, of course, the question. And unfortunately, the political will isn't there. The money isn't there. In fact, the money is tilted the other way. And, of course, the power of the large construction organisations and their influence back to the politics again, going back to your brown paper bags, or is it recycled paper bags these days? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, to the reusable plastic bags nowadays.
you got to be environmentally friendly.
Of course, you have to be. You got to show you care about the environment, Martin. Regardless of whether or not you care about the individual lives that are living in these million-dollar ghettos. But yeah, look, the unfortunate thing is that a lot of this revolves around high-rise construction, which we, as I keep on saying over and over again, there are only few companies, you can count them in one hand, as to that can build high-rise in Sydney, let alone Australia. And unless I'm getting involved in a project that's been built by a first-tier building company, just don't get involved at all. Dan, stay away from this high-rise development is my takeaway from today's show.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I look at the data coming out of my surveys, and I'm still seeing more and more property investors desperately trying to work out how to extract themselves from the investment that they've made previously, right? Do they sell? How do they sell? When do they sell? And in some of these high-rises, you've got not just one or two people, but you've got whole, numbers, even maybe whole floors that are trying to sell. It's just remarkable.
Look, the interesting thing, Martin, and go back to, I think I shared a couple of years ago, is a number of agents when I used to work in the Dulwich Hill, Marrickville area, and we used to manage a lot of property around there. And from time to time, I'd be contacted by Chinese real estate agents that bought off the plan back then in developments that now they not only believe their own BS that they were spruiking to the compatriots over in China that have just celebrated the 100-year anniversary of the CCP, not only did they believe that BS that they were telling the people there, but they themselves believed it, and some of them. And one particular that comes to mind bought three off-the-plan properties and was trying to encourage me by giving me a big commission to try and help him out, get out of those developments there. And it was just uncanny how many people, how many friends, families, locals, overseas investors bought in one complex. We'll never know, but unless you talk to these individual spruikers, as I call them, because they're not really selling agents, they're predominantly spruikers, it's not only until you talk to them face-to-face or in person that you find out how many people of the same family group bought into one complex and how the whole family units are just coming unstuck.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this is something we'll go on watching because, this is not played out yet. I think it's going to be definitely watching ahead. Something else that's worth watching ahead, of course, is we've got local lockdowns still in Sydney, but as we hinted at the top of the show. But, of course, lockdowns, for some reason, don't include some categories of retail, and it doesn't include visiting properties. You can still go visit properties. How does that work?
Oh, it's because it's the power, Martin. It's a positive power, Like it's one of those things, Martin, that you need to accept the fact that this country runs on on a number of things. One is property, the other one is football. And I'm not talking about that aerial ping pong stuff that they play down over the border. Talk about the real stuff, the man's game that we play. And that seems to be the biggest drivers at the moment, apart from obviously shares in banks.
Well, I actually read a wonderful article. It was about New Zealand, and they said, you've got to understand that the New Zealand economy is a property market with a little economy bolted on. I thought it was a very good way of putting it.
Well, look, that's right. So what would the same be for Australia then?
Well, you've probably got two things bolted on. Well, three things probably. We've got three legs to right. We've got the property market in the middle of it. And then we've got the mining sector down one leg, right? You've got the tourist sector down one of the other legs, right? And maybe there's a little bit in the way of, other things, but, almost nothing. So, yeah, but actually the centre of gravity is property, more property. Let's build some more property. Let's sell some property. And, of course, you've got the finance sector, which is the final leg of the stool. And so, basically, we've got a financial system, property construction system at the heart of our economy, and everything else is sort of just orbiting around the edge, right? That's the way I look at it, unfortunately. And of course, the point is that our banks are so highly leveraged into this that they can't really stop doing it, because if they stop doing it, their own bank balance sheets would fall apart. You've got the construction sector that are so reliant on the finance sector. So then, of course, the government and the Reserve Bank has to prop it all up. So that's the way the market goes.
Well, as you were describing that, Martin, all I could see was these images of a scorpion. On the tail end is the government, and at the front end is the banking. The nibs at the front is the banking system, and also the construction. Just plowing away, and then you've got. But the unfortunate thing is, Martin, is that, as you know, the tourism sector is just about dead, and I'd say the hospitality would more than likely be on its knees, especially with ongoing ongoing lockdowns in the future, which we know they're just going to keep on going. But the other thing, Martin, is that we brought up in the show towards the end of last year, and keep in mind is that the mining, as much as they may be making a lot at the moment, make hay whilst the sun shines. Let's not forget that China are making huge inroads into Africa, and it's only now that that the mainstream are reporting some of the issues that the Australian JV companies, mining companies that have ventured into Africa, are having issues because the Chinese big conglomerates are based taking over all the countries that they're involved in, are canning the licenses of the Australian companies, and then obviously miraculously being rebought by Chinese interests.
Yeah, you wonder where that's going to lead. And interestingly, there was another piece of research that came out, and that of course relates to the rise of solo buyers.
Yeah, what did you think of that? Given the fact that they make very clear distinction between the male singles and female singles, and what they are balancing the mortgages to, and it was quite interesting the fact that seems to be that ladies are making wiser decisions, Martin. That was my take out of that.
Well, it's interesting, yes, because basically this is an Emmy Bank survey, and they basically highlighted that a number of people have gone solo to buy property, and that the banks are very willing to lend, but they're willing to lend much more to males than females, right? I mean, a quantum more.
Yeah, well, the quantum is now. Oh, come on, I sort of tend to think that the ladies are a lot smarter. And just going in there with a little bit more caution, but yeah, look, it's one of those things, Martin. The fact of the matter is that when you start breaking it all down, you start to understand a little bit more as to the single, Is it individuals, or is it really more so individuals backed up by mum and dad because of fear of missing out in the future, because of fear of their children not being able to own the principal place of residence in years to come?
Well, I'm sure the Bank of Mum and Dad continues to fire on all cylinders. I see it in my surveys, Ian. And interestingly, the amount of money that's passed down from parents to kids is above 90,000 on average, right? It's quite a lot of money, some even more than that. And that does allow people to get in early. But, of course, it's interesting also to recognise this other factor, that they are three times more likely to default in the subsequent 5 years if they got help, rather than if they went the long route and saved for themselves. And there is also a bit of social analysis that says that females generally are a little bit more cautious. They tend to sort of want to weigh it up and make sure they've got a little bit of security in their decisions, whereas a lot of blokes just say, oh, it's easy, you just go for it, and so you get the bigger mortgage, and they're often the ones that fall over first. And in fact, in my data set, when I look at the default rates of females versus males, right, it's a 2-to-1 ratio. So males are almost twice as likely to default in subsequent 5 years relative to females. So I think you're dead on the money here. Females do the work perhaps a little bit more, a little bit cautious, and therefore they're not so much in hock, and that gives them more flexibility if things go against them. It is quite interesting, and I also see it actually interestingly in crypto and in the stock market too, where you see the same things going on. So there is definitely some behavioural differences, I think, between male and female, which is worth thinking about.
Look, from a personal point of view, in terms of the people that we've dealt with, our clients, it is harder to explain like to a male to look further afield than it is to and show them that they'll get bigger bang for their buck, as we say, if you go further afield than it is to a lady, a young lady, particularly in the in the single income streams, or the single person buyers. So I thought that article highlighted the young lady there that bought a property in Melbourne and bought a little bit further out, but got than what she originally wanted, but got something that was comfortable. Got a property that obviously had a lot more bang for the buck than what she would have otherwise got had she looked closer into the CBD. But then this is the shifting of the sands that we've been talking about, is how people are moving further afield and looking for that bit of land, looking for that space, because of all these ongoing issues around the pandemic and these viruses that are just flying around. The other thing that the article highlighted was the change to her work situation as well, which you and I have also discussed that at length, and we discussed that in early 2020, in February 2020, how things were going to play out, and lo and behold, that's what's happening now. So with these lockdowns and working from home, my only concern is, Martin, is that obviously as businesses start realizing that they can save money, obviously, by not renting commercial property or as big a space as what they would have otherwise rented, that area of the industry is going to really take a major hit. But not only that, but business owners are also going to find out that, hey, as we've said before again on the show, is that they'll start cutting down on hours, no doubt, and they'll also start looking to contract people that are willing to do the job for a lot less, because they are working, after all, working from home, and it's easier, and they could sort of offset certain incomes because they're now working from home, and the flexibility and the trade-off is, okay, I'll get paid less, but I'm working from home. So they're the things that are still yet to play out in its totality, but I can only we can only gather the information and the research from what's happening over in China, because it's obviously a bigger mass of people, as you say, a bigger data set that we get from our WeChat chatters, and see what's happening there and how the society is shifting and things are moving there as well. What parts of the property industry is going south at a million miles an hour? What parts of the property industry is rising in value, similar to what's happening here in Australia as well? Now, the other thing is, of course, now you've got these different groups of people. You've got the 50 to 60 year olds that are basically the unemployed, now looked at as the unemployed group. You've got the 40 to 50 year olds that are called the 996 group, working from 9 in the morning till 9 at night, 6 days a week, and doing extra shifts and picking up moonlighting in all that other free time in order to support the families, and basically giving the government the finger on the third child policy drive that they have, because they simply can't afford it and working such long hours, and they can barely sustain a family. And then you've got the 30 to 40 category, which are basically saying, look, we'll do whatever it takes, we'll do whatever job you want us to do, because we're single, we can move around, we're happy to travel. And then the early 20s to 30 is your tongue ping generation. They're just basically throwing their heads up in the air and said, well, stuff it, not going to achieve anything, not going to be able to afford a property anyway, so might as well just lay down and just take it easy.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? And segmentation, I've always believed in segmentation and do a lot of it, and there you got the Chinese version. Very, very impressive, Edwin. Yeah, and all thanks to WeChat.
The WeChat chatters, which I think, well, that was the lead up to your big interview with the ABC button.
Yes,
come on, that was. I hope you mentioned the WeChat chatters in that interview with the ABC.
I did actually. So there was a thing that I got involved in last week. So I did some modelling, looking at the relative shift over the last few years in terms of the international purchases. Right, numbers come down quite a lot, but also which geographies they came from, and so the numbers dropped in Asia. It's gone up in Europe. It's gone up in from the Americas as well. We've discussed, of course, and we also saw some very strong figures coming with people buying to come back to Australia, and of course buying houses rather than not. But we did also get to talk about some of the things that we were seeing from the, the WeChat chats and chat. It is very interesting because, the wind has changed, I think. I don't think the same appetite that there was a few years ago for the high-rise, smaller units. We've proved already from what we've seen, that's changed, right? And, when the borders open, as they probably will at some point, we will see some movement, but it's not going to be the same as it was. And yet, of course, there are still some people spruiking that the great saviour for the property sector, particularly the high-rise, is going to be the Chinese sector. I'm not convinced.
No, not at all. Neither am I, Martin. They've got a lot more things to think about and to be concerned about in China than buying investment properties that will never get rented out in Sydney's commercial hubs, because it's, as I said, there's a lot more going on in mainland China than what the mainstream would put out, there's only so much that we could share online. There's only so much that we could share publicly without going into too much detail. But all I can say is just, be prepared. One of the things, though, that I am a bit bullish on at the moment, as I said, Martin, is the price of land is going to, or established homes are still going to be strong. Based on the dynamics that's playing out at the moment, how the apartment market ends up is all I see for that is carnage. All I see for that is total devastation in terms of the locals that invested in heavily in there. I know people that have, you know, invested, as I said, bought two or three apartments in Sydney, Melbourne, and in Brisbane, you know, around the same time, and you know, two of the three, if not three, have been vacant for a number of months, and they are struggling, because at the end of the day, owners' corporations or strata levies and all the other fees that go along with owning property in a strata lot, in a strata complex, still has to be met in order to maintain the common areas. But going back to the freestanding homes or properties with that bit of land for that feel good security, sense of security, until we see numbers, listing numbers rise, where there's still going to be a bit of pressure. When I mean pressure, there's still going to be a bit of heat in that sector. And as you said, and you pointed out in the ABC report, the appetite for the expats and for a lot of the people coming back, and if anybody's got any interest in investing, is not owning a three-bedroom penthouse in Parramatta of all places, yeah, that was worth $1.8 million, but rather put that further afield, because let's not forget that the people in America, the people in parts of America that are coming over, in parts of Canada, in Europe, that they are used to traveling over an hour to go to work. So, you know, we seem to have an issue with that, and we don't seem to want to travel more than our and commute more than an hour. But these people are, and they will take advantage of those properties for further out, because they're happy to commute for that sense of security and that sense of safety, mate.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why the price dynamics are where they are, I think. So I guess as we come to the end of our show, we should just pause and say there's another hint coming up, right? A really important hint for tenants.
Well, that's been the flavour of the last few weeks, Martin. Last week, I was contacted by three groups, and they all were based around the same issue, and that is the outgoing inspections. Basically, when they're handing the key back to the agency or the property manager after they've either bought or have to move out, right? So the tip for our viewers is, look, when you go out and lease a property and you get given the report by the agent, 40, 50% of the time, the reports that the agents give you still unfortunately come in by way of just in writing. Not everybody is providing photos. But regardless of whether you get a property, what we call an ingoing inspection report in just in writing, or a condition report just in writing, or attached, you know, with accompanied with photos, I say to people, do your own. Take your own photos and in detail, room by room, and document any issue, any little bit, any speck of dirt that you find on the windowsill, on the in the tracks of the built-in robes, on top of the ceiling fans, on top of the brackets for the brackets for the Venetian blinds, anything in the exhaust fan, pull that apart. That's, you know, from the exhaust fan in the range hood. Pull that apart, pull that down, and photograph it. And then, you know, build your own report, build your own story. Don't just rely on written. Yes, I agree. No, I don't agree. Because that's all majority of property managers want you to do, so that they can have a better leg to stand on when they go to claim the bond that they may want you to forego because they were too lazy to get anything done and they want to blame you. It's just, so that's a tip. So do your own report and do it in detail. I've told some people, you know, that if it means that they take 100 photos, 200, 300, take as many as you can, and it's all digital. It's not going to cost you anything more than other than the small USB stick that you can give back, or a link on Google Drive that you can keep and give the link to the property manager to save you a lot of money in the future when they do their outgoing inspection report.
Yeah, and I think 2 points to that, Edwin. Firstly, it's quite useful if you can actually embed on the photograph the date that you took it. So you've got evidence that it was like that on that date, first point, right? The second one is it's useful to sometimes let the letting agent know that you've assembled a portfolio, right? And you actually have held that and you hold that, right? Because it means that they're less likely then to play silly bees at the end and try and effectively push onto you damage that was there beforehand, right? Which, of course, often is the case. And the other, of course, which is another side of it, is they'll often insist that you use a particular cleaning company on the way out. And I think that's big questions about that. To my mind, as long as it's clean, it's clean. It doesn't matter who did it.
And this is why, yes, agree with your points there, Martin. And this is why you do that report and you hand it back, you hand the written report back, the forms that they give you, along with your photos, your version of how you found. But before you move in, the key tip to this is do it before you move in, as opposed to when after you've shoved everything in the house, because the agents tell you, you don't worry too much about the handing this back. You've got 7 days. Once you move in, you're able to see what's wrong or agree or disagree. You can hand back the report. Now that's bullshit. Do it before you move in, because it's as you receive the property. And post moving in, it can be construed as after the fact. And when you do your when you get a cleaner to do your cleaning, if you need to get a cleaner, look, it's not a bad thing, Martin, if you do use the agency cleaner, providing it's a fair price. You got to compare the price. So providing it's a fair price. There are times it's a 50-50 call, but there are times where I've said to people, use the agent's cleaner, because once they clean it, providing there's no other damage to the property or there's no other comebacks or there's nothing else that you can think of, then if they do come back to you by saying, oh, this wasn't clean properly or that, hey, this was the cleaner that you recommended. So there is, it's a 50-50 call.
Yeah, good point, Edwin. Yeah, well, I think with all of these things, caution on the way in, plan, take the photographs, keep the records, and that gives you leverage on the way out. The very, very important advice, I think, Edwin. And, I have to say that I think if you look back over the last few weeks, tenants have built a whole armory of things that they can take hold of and grasp and drive to a much more successful outcome, thanks to you. St. Edwin.
look, it's a pleasure, and as I've said along, my start in the real estate industry was predominantly through property management, and I'm passionate about it, and I think that everybody needs to have a fair go, and more so now, Martin, that for the prices, the rental prices for homes, freestanding homes, because of that. People want to have that peace of mind. They are increasing in a lot of areas for nice, tidy homes. But this is where now the next push has to be from the regulators and the industry bodies to encourage, by way of whether it be a stick or an incentive for landlords to maintain the properties and maintain them well. Because we're dealing with lives, we're dealing with families, we're dealing with adults, elderly, the young, all walks of life. Not to mention also, pets that are precious. Everyone's precious, and our pets are precious, our family's precious, and we need to take a little bit more care, take a step back, and be a little bit more compassionate and passionate towards the people that are going to be occupying our investment properties.
Absolutely, Edwin. And you didn't say the obvious thing, which was we need carrot and stick. You missed it.
Well, I'm not the comedian, man. You are.
Excellent. Edwin, very important advice there, as always. So thank you very much for that. And, you know, we'll continue to keep the audience abreast of what's going on, and also drop in a few tips and pearls of wisdom as we continue our weekly rant. Really appreciate it. And we'll do it all again next week, I guess.
Oh, look, we will, Martin. And I do encourage our followers, yeah, just follow me on Twitter. You no doubt put my Twitter link up there, and we can share more tips and more ideas, as because you and I obviously talk during the week, and there's a lot more that we can unpack, but time is limited, and other shows must go on, you know. So you know, got to make some room for the other for Tony Lecantro and Tarek and everybody else, Martin. Can't have it all.
No, I think Tarek's coming on soon. Tony Lecantro is on in a couple of weeks, and a few others too. So, yeah, anyway, but you know, always have time for you, Edwin, because those pearls of wisdom are worth their weight in gold.
And looking forward to next week, and let's see what unravels this week. But I'm still hoping for that South American strand, Martin. That it's going to be hot. That's all I can say. It's going to be a real hot one.
Yeah, well, okay. And, of course, the big question is, have you planted your carrots yet? We'll hear about that next week, eh?
Not yet. Still get in there. I'm still submitting the DA for the high-rise, turning the chook shed into a high-rise, man.
Okay. Well, we'll get an update about that next week. See you later. Bye-bye.